There are lots of ideas how you can change the world. Some people think you should just complain about it. That won't change the world. It'll just make it mad. Some people think you have to be really loud and yell a lot. It's like with a bullhorn shouting,
"Hey you, yeah you, do it my way right now. You heard?"
Welcome to the Objective Secure Podcast. My name's Mike.
Hi, I'm Emma.
And this is episode 22, Great Expectations. We're going to be talking about some of the expectations that TOs have of players and what players should have of TOs in their events and how we try and handle those for any of our tournaments that we run, whether it's for 40K, for Age of Sigmar, or for any of the other game systems that we've hosted in the past or potentially in the future.
Yeah, I think it's something that we are very aware of, but something that we have not necessarily formalised, and we're sort of starting that formalisation process and just, I guess, sharing some of that.
Yeah, I think part of the factor in that, of course, is we've had a few controversies in some of the major events in the last 6 months or so, culminating in the American Team Challenge on the weekend just gone, which has seen its fair share of...
I don't know that it's culminating at the American Team Challenge. I just think that the American Team Challenge is the latest in a string of them. And when we were talking about topics for today's podcast, we were sort of going, well, what can we talk about? And this is something that just keeps happening with some of those really big international events. And how can we make it so that our events are not finishing up with this, you know, huge amount of negative publicity around them?
Learning from what's going on, I suppose, and then trying to put things in place to deal with that is a kind of a good way of describing it.
And really what we're trying to do is shape the way that we view these events and trying to, rather than jumping on a negative bandwagon, trying to look at a way that we can take a positive from it and make it so that when people do attend events, what changes can we make so that people do come away from it having a positive experience rather than, I guess, gossiping about it internationally?
Yeah. And look,
actually, we still want you to gossip about it. We just want you to say good things.
Before we get too stuck into the topic, though, why don't we talk a little bit about what's been going on since the last podcast? We did our live stream.
Nothing's been going on since the last podcast. It's been school holidays, yeah.
Well, that is true. That is very true, actually.
And it's raining.
Yeah, look, obviously.
It's been lots of rain.
Being in the Southern Hemisphere, we are in the middle of winter, or just coming out of into the third month of winter now.
Just in case people wonder, yes, it does rain in Australia, and yes, it is cold.
And it does it for about, it feels like it's done it for 2 months solid, but it hasn't really.
We've had a few, it really hasn't.
Had a few sunny days in there as well.
We just have a couple of days of rain and complain about it. And even though I say it's cold, it's still like 20 degrees.
It's not 20 degrees. We're hitting single digits overnight.
Yeah.
Well, Celsius, I should add.
We're still hitting, you know, mid-20s for our daytime. It's
we've had a couple of glorious
days. That
feels
cold to
yeah,
me.
Well, you feel cold all the time.
Yeah, I do.
Just walking around in, like, literally in thermal clothing and it's only, like, 15 or 16 degrees.
I've got a thermal top on and a cardi and a big, thick puffer jacket and I'm thinking I should have brought a blanket for my legs. I'm a bit chilly. I've got trousers on as well.
Well, that's something. Mm. And she's got shoes on.
Yeah.
But, so ignoring the cold, yes, it has been school holidays, so we've been a little bit quiet. Not just in recording and in gaming, but also in organising show and everything else because, we've had three kids under our feet for the last 2 weeks.
You know, trying to be parents and that kind of thing.
So, you know, gaming does have to take a back seat for when we've got the kids at home. And I can already hear the voices out there going, "Are you kidding? They just need to pitch in and help."
True.
So, yeah, we
did get some more board game time in. We got a new board game and played that with the kids.
Yeah, we've taught them Carcassonne. This is the Gold Rush edition, based in the American Gold Rush era, which is an interesting twist on the game, which is cool. They picked that up pretty quickly, actually. Our 5-year-old even won the first game by a considerable margin, actually. So
yeah, there was no skill involved. No. That was just luck.
She still won it.
Yeah.
So that was entertaining. We also got our latest copies of the... we've been working on some stuff for a show, one of which has been some custom shoulder pads and rhino doors for Space Marines. Now, I was fortunate enough to get in contact with a guy by the name of John who runs haylandterrain.com. So it's haylandterrain.com. And they specialize in 28mm terrain and scenery primarily. But when I spoke to John, he was very eager to help us out with this project. So we worked with him. He was actually so eager that before I'd even agreed to pay for the design work, he'd already done the design and done a test print, which was awesome. So we have some 3D printed...
We did then go ahead and pay for that.
We did. so we got some 3D printed shoulder pads that fit Space Marines and some Rhino doors as well. So if you saw us on the live stream, we have had... had them there, and we also put a couple of shots of them up on the Facebook page. Mm-hmm. I'm in the process of building a squad of Marines for them to go on.
He's in the process of building a lot of things.
Yeah, look, there is a significant pile of stuff sat here beside me.
Yeah. Michael's not very good at focusing or, you know.
No, like, for the record, I've got the Reaver Titan sat at my feet, which if you've checked out the website, that's there's photos of the box that came in. There's more than a dozen Dark Elf or Drakari Reaver jet bike sat here beside me in pieces. There's a commission squad I've got to finish of Ultramarines for Heresy. There's a five-man combat squad and a Razorback, which these shoulder pads have to go on. There's a box of Daughters of Cain. There's a bit sat here around me. Oh, and I've also got a terrain, like a 1-foot by 1-foot tile that came from...
a Kickstarter.
Yeah, I can't remember the Kickstarter's name now. That's horrible. Oh, well. So I've got to do that up as a display board for the Obsec Marine chapter, and then I've also brought in some of the terrain to start sorting that out for show. So a little bit of stuff to do, and we've got our doubles event in like a week and a half.
Yeah,
so
if you haven't got your doubles tickets,
grab them. You can still grab them now. I think we've got 25 teams at the moment. Mm-hmm. And while we're talking doubles, you should also head on over to downunderpairings.com and register your team there. You can find
after you've purchased your ticket.
And then what'll happen is I'll jump on and log in this afternoon and verify all the teams that are there so that you guys can upload your lists and do all that sort of stuff as well. So special thanks to Diffie for setting that up for us and helping me through, because I know he had to adapt the system to cope with the double software, so we might even try a test run this weekend to make sure it works the way we think it does.
Sounds like fun. I can't think of anything I'd rather be doing on the weekend.
You're going to be out, so it's fine. I might even get some more hobby done this weekend.
Could clean the house.
I could, but I'd rather do hobby.
Yeah. So. would you rather paint terrain than clean the house?
Yes.
Yeah, all right then.
Yeah, I will. Look, it gives me an excuse to go to Hobby Tech Toys up in...
No, no excuses to go to Hobby Tech Toys.
And get some more airbrush paint.
No!
So shout out there to Hobby Tech Toys I think they're Myrie officially. Mm. They get a lot of our visits for anything non-Games Workshop related in terms of hobby. So paints and Vallejo and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, they're a favourite stop of mine if we're ever heading out towards Fremantle.
Even if we're not.
No, exactly. What else has been happening? We've seen the previews for Kill Team since we last recorded, which is pretty exciting. The terrain especially is of interest to us, particularly for the Realm of Battle that we had planned for show. With the discontinuation of the old Cities of Death terrain, it actually left us in a position where we had kind of a third of enough terrain to do the table.
Although I have actually had an idea about that. So if you remind me after we finish recording, I'll chat to you about that.
Oh, okay. I was just hoping to buy the new terrain.
I'm not necessarily suggesting that we don't buy the new terrain, but perhaps for a different table.
Oh, okay, cool. So we have to now hold our breath and hope that comes out in time for us to do the terrain.
Yeah, because if that comes out on the 1st of September or sometime around there, that's not going to be enough time.
You never know.
I'd rather have it done before then. Just saying.
Well, my plan is to try and get all the base paints and everything down on the actual board itself by the end of the weekend.
Have you washed it yet?
I've only got to wash one tile.
So no.
No.
You haven't washed it yet.
We've got one of the Castellan strongholds from Forge World sat here that I bought a few years ago, and it's kind of sat in perpetuity on the top of the terrain pile to be done. And then we picked up the Realm of Battle at the start of the year. Or was it late last year? It was late last year, wasn't it?
I have no idea.
To do for show, and
that's still set in the bag.
I unpacked it. I sorted out how it was going to lay it out. What was really surprising is there was no clips to hold the thing together. No. So, whereas when they first released the original Realm of Battle, it had little clips that held the tiles together.
Oh, or the ones that we've been using for the Age of Sigmar events, none of those have had clips.
No, and that's what I'm kind of going, oh, that's interesting. It just means I'll get some nice strong magnets.
Magnets, yeah.
And glue them in so that they just kind of hold the tiles roughly where they should be, which means that...
They just need to go on the, on the inside of the plastic rather than... Actually, so that the two magnets touch each other. So the magnets will have to go through
the plastic.
The plastic.
Yeah. And that's easy. I'll just
get a couple.
We'll
have gaps.
Yeah.
I suppose you could drill them.
No, plastic's not thick enough. Mm. It's just easier to glue them on the inside and put a layer of green stuff over the top to hold them in place, and that'll be enough. Mm-hmm. They don't need to be strong enough to pick up as a 6-foot table. They just need to not move.
Yeah.
So, so that's kind of cool. We've got that coming. And I will get that painted. Promise.
For which show?
Depends on when the terrain's out. We'll get the board done.
No, because remember, I've got a plan.
Right. Okay. I don't like that smile. That's a bit scary. I don't know what she's got planned now. What else have we had happening? We also had our venue, which if by the time you're listening to this, we should be having a formal announcement on the website. And on the Facebook page, the doubles event will be moving venues. Sadly, we've had a situation take place outside of our control that means the venue that we would normally run our event at is no longer available. So
we covered all that in the Facebook.
In the live stream a week ago. Okay. So if you want to go and check out all that, you can go and check that out on the Facebook page. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be moving the venue and we'll be in touch with all the players and all the teams to make sure that they're all aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think... I can't think of anything else we need to cover now, so why don't we just take a quick break and get stuck into the main topic, which is all about floor rules and expectations of players and TOs and how we can look at some of the challenges and how we can make things better for the community.
Yeah, how we can have a positive experience.
So with great expectations comes great responsibility. I know that's not a line from anything, but I think it should be.
Yeah, it was so much so we've been Googling it just in case we could find it somewhere.
So we're going to talk about some of the floor rules, if you like to call them that, that players should adhere to. Some of the stuff that we strive to do as TOs and event organisers. And
it's funny because you use the term floor rules. I guess what I'm more accustomed to hearing is just like rights and responsibilities.
Yeah, and that's probably a better statement. I know that... There's obviously a lot of organised play that do have floor rules in regards to your conduct on the floor of gaming. So we're talking about things like poker. Chess have their own set of floor rules. And there's a few game systems when we started looking into this that do actually have their own set of floor rules.
Yeah.
And they're lengthy documents.
Did you try and plough through it? Was it 27 pages?
33 pages from the Legend of Five Rings. It's the 2015 document, so I don't know how current it is in reference to the actual game that is currently available. But it's
let us know. If we put out a 33-page document, how many of you will read it?
I suspect that's going to be a very, very short number of people. But the most important part about it is, rights and responsibilities of the event organisers and the players. And with some of the controversy of some of the major American events and obviously...
I think the international events.
Yeah, the UK events as well that we saw. And the ETC is coming up in Croatia in a couple of weeks' time, which... Hopefully we'll avoid some of those issues, but I'm sure that something will come out of it. Good luck to the Australians while we're thinking about it. But the fact is that we want to try and make sure that we are as clear in our expectations as possible with players, and we make our situation and stance clear for them so that their expectations are adequately met. And I know that the guys who are from Frontline Gaming at ITC headquarters are looking at setting up something very similar for ITC events to try and set some standards and expectations. So we're going to talk about that today. So where are we going to start?
It's a tricky one because where are we going to start? I guess I just want to, before we do start, I just want to reiterate that really what we're trying to highlight is that at the end of some of these major events recently, there has been so much negative press for them.
Yeah.
And to kind of go, okay, so if we look at that negative press, we can go into that and we can talk about it for hours on end, but really all that is gossip. So it's not actually making any positive change to the international gaming community. So when we look at what's caused some of that controversy, what is it possible that we can do that makes a positive change? And what can we do to make sure that our event, so all of our events, but I guess in particular the Southern Hemisphere Open, because we do have people travelling interstate and internationally to attend that event.
Yep.
What can we do to make sure that going forward, the publicity that comes out of that is around people's positive experiences, not around the negative aspects of the gaming culture that's potentially around in pockets places.
I also think it's important to recognise the fact that while we obviously want positive press, we want that positive press to be genuine because people don't have those issues with what we do.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily talking about positive press. I'm actually talking about making it a positive experience.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's not not necessarily about us getting kudos and, you know, unearned accolades. It's about players going away with a positive experience and wanting to share that.
And wanting to come back the next year.
Yeah, as opposed to going away unhappy with their experience and the investment that they made in attending that event.
And one of the things is I think that we need to make a conscious effort not to join in on gossip around what's happening at events that we haven't attended.
Yeah.
And I think that that's happening. And so there are people from all over the world dipping in and making, you know, they're making comment around something that they weren't part of, they didn't experience, they don't know what happened behind the scenes, they have part of a story and
they've got it 57 hand through Facebook or wherever.
Yeah, that's it, through Facebook that's been shared. And so we don't know what happened. So I think we need to just kind of go, okay, well, rather than focusing on adding to that negativity that's happening around the tournament scene, just really kind of going, you know what, we want people to have a really good time. So how can we make a positive change to make that happen?
Yeah, and like you just said, it's easy to fall into the well of, oh, we wouldn't do this or we wouldn't do that. The fact of the matter
is it's really easy to fall into the trap of gossip. We're both gossips.
Yeah. And look, and being an organizer for an event is not easy. Anyone who
it's
says
really
it is
not easy.
You know, if you're doing it with eight mates at home, it's not so bad, but as soon as you dip your toe into the public life, when you're putting yourself out there and opening yourself up to being judged by other people for attending your events, you have to be willing to accept some of the feedback and try and improve on that. And hopefully we've always put it out there that we've been able to do that, and we've tried to make changes as we've had them suggested. So the life of a TO is not easy, let alone any major event that they're hosting. Things like the LVO, like the London GT, like the American Team Championships, all of those events aren't just one game system. They're multiple game systems over multiple days. They're not, you know, Adepticon, Gen Con, any of those massive events, they're not easy things to organize and coordinate, let alone then run on the day. And we can say that from our own firsthand experience with some of our events. Now, while we haven't hit, you know, tournaments like LVO yet in terms of numbers, you know, we're in the hundreds now.
We're in the hundreds attending events. But, I mean, we had 3,000 people who came through show last year.
Yeah, over the 3 days. That was awesome for us.
Mm.
But
it's not something that you pull together the week before an event. Like,
no.
A lot of time, energy, effort goes into this. And I guess that with that, it is easy to overlook some things.
Yeah.
So what we're hoping to do is to try and formalize things so that we can be more aware of them, but also let attendees know what they can expect and what we expect, and hopefully that way we can try and reduce some of that.
Yeah. So we've also got our Bill of Rights that we put together.
We need to edit and
yes,
change.
Yes, it needs to be updated. but the corp component of it is probably still relevant and still in line with what we think and believe. So we've got a couple of points out of that now.
Yeah. So the Bill of Rights, as far as what our players have a right to. So the first one is have fun and meet new people.
Yeah. Look, if you're going to play games, you should be having fun. If you're not having fun, then there's a problem.
And there's no reason that you can't go to a competitive game and still have fun.
Absolutely. The other thing with meet new people, obviously there's a tournament circuit where, particularly in Perth where we are as isolated as we are, there will be a core group of regulars who try and make it to everything, and you might recognise everyone in the room. But there are also a group of people that you might only see at tournaments. So you get to catch up with friends who you've made over the gaming table.
Having said that, if you're a new player or someone who's returning to gaming after a hiatus, we really encourage you to come to events. Like, our players are really, they're really friendly and open and welcoming. So even though, you know, there are a core group that go to majority of the WA events, there's always new players coming in and they're always welcomed. Well,
Doubles has got a bunch of new faces coming for their first tournaments in a couple of weeks' time, which is going to be awesome. And Show brought out a bunch of people I'd never met before. As an organizer, let alone as a player, so
whether you had met them, you've just got a terrible memory.
Yeah, well, there is that possibility.
Yeah,
but no. You know,
OBSEC events are meant for fun, and their main purpose is to allow everyone to have fun by playing games. Playing is its own reward, and no cheating or unsportsmanlike behavior should be tolerated by any attendee. So it says, see later in the document about sportsmanship and conduct. One of the things that comes up for me in this is, what does sportsmanship actually mean? It's really tricky because I've Googled it and looked at however many different dictionary definitions, and I can't find one that actually accurately defines what I think sportsmanship means.
I think it's, for me, it's at least playing the game in a fair and even manner, treating the opponent and ruling, like making rules adjudications between the two of you the way that you would, you know, treating them equally, I suppose, conducting yourself in a manner that, you know, doesn't make you look like a...
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's kind of my rule of sportsmanship is, to quote Adam Hills, don't be a dick.
Yeah. If you can turn up to the game, play it fairly, follow all the rules, have a laugh, you know, you don't have to get on with the player that you're playing. And
no, you just have to be civil.
You know, be civil.
Be kind, be
open,
be courteous.
Yeah. Show them some respect.
Yep.
And I know that can be an interesting one when, you know, you don't see eye to eye, but I think that's the show of a proper sportsman, is that if you can win with good grace, lose with good grace, and still walk away from the table regardless of the situation and go, yep, that was cool. Like, that was a game. Like, you know...
And it is hard. A lot of people are so emotionally invested in the game, so it can be really hard not to be disheartened by losing.
Yeah.
But it's not allowing that being disheartened to actually impact on the kind of person that you are.
Yeah.
So still being respectful and still being courteous, I think.
Look, we all have moments across the table where you go, oh, really? Like, again? Like, it's... And those moments are fine. I think it's how you then recover.
It's how you come back from it.
You recover from that and go, okay, cool, let's just suck it up and keep playing and, you know, try and make the best of it. And then shake hands at the end of it and go, yep, cool, man, thanks for the game.
Like, the same time is... Sometimes it's easy to get carried away when you're winning as well.
Yeah, and that's what I said, you know, a second ago about being a good winner as well. It'd be easy to gloat and, you know, jump. Yeah, exactly. You know, do a little jig and laugh and, you know, I kicked your ass. And I think, again, if you know the opponent in question and you've got, you know...
Well, that's it. I mean, so the noise that I just made, I will quite often make that if we're playing and I end up with a good... You know,
yeah, good draw, or good card,
you know, whatever a good kind of move is for that particular turn, but it's never done with malice, and I guess that's part of my personality as well.
Mm.
But at the same time, if I have a really bad turn or you have a really good turn, then it won't switch that kind of attitude.
Yeah, well, it helps that we've been together 20 years now. So
I'm not sure that helps.
Just more likely to do it.
Yeah. So, number two, play as many games as we can fit in a day. This is a tricky one as well. They're all a bit tricky.
It's pretty self-explanatory. Our goal is to obviously provide you the maximum bang for your buck in terms of games versus time.
Actually, you've almost word for word covered to that. What's the point coming to a tournament if you're only going to play a game or two? Value for money is an important facet of attending events. We want you to get the most of the games that you offer, that we offer. But it's interesting that when we talked about the number of games for show, I was talking about doing a slightly smaller points level and having four games, and yet the consensus from the players has been, no, three games is enough.
Yeah, that is true. I think the trick is...
So that's what I meant when I said this is a tricky one, because I was kind of thinking, three games in a day? Like, that just seems a bit...
Depends on how many points you're talking and how big
and
the games are.
And how long those games are, yeah.
I think the trick is that you don't want to be going to a tournament for 12 hours and only playing for 5 or 6. You know, you want to be going there and going, cool, I'm here for 12 hours, taking out the lunch breaks, the gaps in between and the awards.
That sounds so overwhelming, going to an event for 12. I know that our events do run and we're there for 14, 16 hours, but when you say it like that, it just sounds really long.
Well, I mean, most events will probably, the average player will probably be there 10 or 11 hours when you think about it. They turn up... Unless you're doing one of those big events that runs late.
It's probably 10 hours.
They're there
8
from,
o'clock till 6 o'clock.
Well, that's it. From 8 till 6 is about the guess. So you're 10 hours there. You go, cool, I take out an hour for the breaks and an hour for the awards and the intro at the start. So I've got 8 hours of play. How many games can I realistically get in that 8 hours?
4 2-hour games.
Well, you could do 4 2-hour games. The problem with that is that it does create a situation where you're trying to balance time and games and making sure that everyone gets to finish. And some players will come along with an army of 10 models and be finished in half that time and then wander around for an hour going on board, whereas the other half who have brought 150 or 200 or more models.
So maybe what we need to look at is rewording that some way, that play as many games as we can fit in a day and that we can complete in a day.
Yeah.
So something around, and I guess that's one of the rights that our players have. They have a right to an appropriate game length that you're likely
for
to finish
time.
The game.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm just making notes because these are important. So as they come to us, I'll...
Yeah, look, I think any of those sorts of... And I see it a lot at the moment about chess clocks and how, you know, things need to be monitored with devices and that sort of thing. I'm still not convinced that chess clocks actually answer any of the issues, and a lot of it just comes down to players and their own speed and their own...
Yeah, I really don't think that chess clocks are the answer as far as enforcing those chess clocks. I think that if you want to come along with the OBSEC app on your iPad or phone and use that so that you can kind of track how you're going, then that's awesome. But it's not something that we're likely to put in our events. On the sort of flip side to that is I'm wondering, is there too much pressure at the moment around how important it is for people to finish games? Like by saying, continually going on about how it's really important that players practice and practice and practice and practice and practice before coming to events so that they know they can complete a game in X number of hours, are we actually getting to a point where we're encouraging an elite level of player to attend and people who are starting out and who might be newer and less experienced feel as though they can't come because they can't guarantee they're going to finish their game?
Look, that might be possible, I suppose, but I also think that if you're coming to an event, the last thing, and as a new player, the last thing you want to do is get to the event and play 2 turns in a 2.5-hour game. So I think there has to be a level of expectation to say, you know what, we need to be finishing. Like 4 turns is the one that I see bandied around a lot as the, hey, you know, minimum expectation. And the numbers that, you know, we're tracking now, first manually, we did that with the WATC here in Perth, and then
now we'll be using down under pairings
tracks the time that the players input the time input their scores and also ask for the amount of turns they completed, so we can actually start gathering some real data. It's really good because it means that we can, at least in Australia, and hopefully as other communities start using it, I know that there was talk of it being used in the UK, we can actually start getting some real data. I mean, we were playing 2 hour games or two and a quarter hour rounds at 1500 points, and the average game was 3.7 turns a player. So we're just shy of that 4 turn expectation, and then people say, oh, let's put the points up to 2000 instead of 1500, and you go, well, if I add 500 points but only add half an hour to that time limit, the likelihood is that number comes down. So you're right. I think the expectation should be I'm going to come along and play as many games to completion as possible within the time frame.
Awesome. Point number three, have tournament disputes, rules, queries and questions settled by polite, impartial judges?
So Emma's been learning a lot about 40K over the last 6 months in particular.
Yeah.
And...
Because prior to that, I was still in denial.
And And anyone who's come to our events or it's seen
me. What are the stages of grief? Which one's, is it acceptance? I think I'm up to acceptance.
I've always tried to rule, and my mates should back me up on this, where I've ruled against them at tournaments before.
You've ruled against yourself at tournaments as well.
That is true. The fact is that, yeah, you need to have judges that the players can trust to be objective and to give them a fair crack of the whip.
Fair crack of the whip was fine.
Yep, okay.
Let's try and keep it as less ochre as we possibly can. Fair shake of the sauce bottle.
I actually wasn't going there. I couldn't think what that saying was.
I thought I'd finish it just in case anyone got to fair shake of the and didn't know what the end of it was.
I think the fact that the judges need to be held accountable for their actions. Look, and I've said this to players before, when we've gotten to a rules query at a table, at a tournament, and I've ruled it one way and the opponents, one of the players has gone, no, I disagree, I still think you're wrong, I still say you're wrong. I'll say the same thing now that I do then. If I'm wrong after the event and you come and find me and say, hey man, I've spent the last half an hour looking at all the FAQs and I found this answer here and it's directly different to what you answered, that's fine.
Well, like, you'll apologise.
Of course.
At the time of ruling, you have to go with how you've read the rules, how you understand
the information
the rules,
that we have on hand.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. So I'm more than happy to be proven wrong on any ruling I make because it makes me a better judge.
I was going
to
say, please do so because we, exactly for that reason, we learn through finding that information out.
Yeah.
But we're also not just going to take somebody's word for it because they're adamant.
No, exactly. And the burden of proof always lies on the players to be able to provide that information to the judge to state their case. If you come to me and say, hey, I don't have to do this because I have a rule that says this, have your codex open.
I was going to say, show us the rule.
Have your book open to the page that says exactly what you're talking about. And I find a lot of these rules where someone says, oh, it does this, when you actually go and read it.
Yeah. So what I've noticed is, and it's mainly through the Facebook kind of pages that I'm on, people haven't actually read the rule.
No,
they've heard somebody else talk about the rule. So somebody's sort of misread it and then you end up with this game of Chinese whispers. And by the time you get it to an event, we've been playing it this way for the last 2.5 years. And turns out that's not what's written in the book.
No, it also comes from people making their own short notes and summary sheets. It comes from some of the army building apps that are available that kind of shorthand the rules to make it work within the software.
Mm.
When you actually go and read the words and read them in context, in the right sentence structure, in the right order, a lot of the time the rules get resolved really clearly because you're
there
not...
There are a few where there's...
Oh, there's plenty.
Yeah, there's kind of...
But some of the obvious ones
interpretation
get resolved because you actually read what it says, not read what you think it says.
Yeah, or read what somebody told you that it said.
Yeah.
Two years ago, when you first started playing this edition.
Yeah, so being a judge isn't easy. At the same time, yeah, we like to learn. If there's a gap in my rules knowledge, A, it makes me a better player, but B, it also gives us the ability to make a consistent ruling across the whole event if that situation comes up again.
Yeah, he can't remember faces or names, but a rule from second edition when with that he's got down pat. impartiality of judges, sorry, obviously is something that we expect and that our players should expect from us.
Yep.
Have the event organised and run in a timely manner.
Time's an interesting one. We do our best to set a schedule and stick to it.
Mm.
Up to
one of us does more of it.
I write the schedule. You stick to it.
Yeah.
We do our best with, if we're running a little bit behind, we will do our best to, if we've got everything organised early in the break, we'll start the next round a little bit early to try and catch up. Running overtime by 5 or 10 minutes, I think, is completely reasonable. Running overtime 3 hours and expecting players to hang around is not.
So part of that is we try and make sure that we have a way to get players registered quickly so that games can start on time, so that we know that you guys are all in the room. And so up until very recently, we were using Best Coast pairings. Now we're using Down Under pairings for Southern Hemisphere Open. It is slightly more labour intensive as far as checking people in.
Yep.
Because all the players will need to come and register at the front desk before they go
in.
Get
their wristbands and everything.
So they'll need to get their wristband for the event, and that needs to happen both days. So they have to have their tickets ready. So ways that you can help this to happen is to have your ticket ready so that we can scan you and give you your wristband and you can go in nice and quickly. If you don't have it, that's fine, but it's going to take us a little bit longer to look you up by your surname and, you know, click you in for which event you're actually here for.
Yeah.
Then when you actually arrive, going straight up to your TO and letting them know that you're here so that they can register you as actually being in
signed,
the building.
Signed in and ready, yeah.
Making sure that prior to the event you've uploaded all of your lists.
Yep, and you've registered and signed in with the appropriate software. Now, 90% of show will be run through Down Under Pairings. Yeah.
And that will all be in the players pack around using Down Under Pairings, or if it's not using Down Under Pairings, then an equivalent
doing?
Will be listed there and telling you how to do that. But we are going to do everything within our power to make sure that those events start at the time that's listed in that player's pack.
Yeah, and then obviously try and finish them at the time it's listed in the player's pack and do the awards at the time it's listed.
Yeah, but so I guess I'm mentioning this because obviously there was controversy with an international event that happened recently where the event was due to start, I think, at 10 a.m. and at 11:30, they still had people queuing outside trying to get in. So we make sure that we've got plenty of people on the door, we've got people, you know, knowing how to get you through that nice and quickly.
We also have a period of time between the doors open and the event start.
Which was exactly what I was about to say. The least number of people rock, if your event starts at 9 o'clock, if you leave it until 8:55 to arrive, it's going to put added pressure on. Whereas if you can get there earlier, then obviously it gives us a chance to get you registered and make sure that we can start that on time.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Which also does come down to, it's going to come under the responsibilities as well, but if for an event that isn't show, if you're running late or you aren't coming, let us know.
Yeah, it's one that, we haven't had too much of an issue with it in recent months, but occasionally we were in situations where, you know, we'd be waiting to start the event with two people short or one person short.
Yeah.
Or a team short. And you're left going as a TO, well, do I start the event? How do I do that? You know, if they turn up and I've already run the first round of matchups, what do I do? Mm. You know, there is an impact not just to the TO and the event, but to the other players.
Mm.
And there's just a little bit of courtesy there helps everyone out, because it means that if you're not coming, if you're sick, you know, get in touch with the organizer. The best way for us, at least, is my mobile number's in the players pack.
Mm. Ring it. Don't send him a text message, because we are running around like with chooks with our head chopped off.
Yep.
And a chook is a chicken. and, you know, so if you just send a text or a Facebook message.
Facebook isn't open on the day.
No, we don't see it.
And the same with sending an email. It's
oh, yeah, don't do that.
We've had a couple of people do that, and I found that after the fact.
Yeah.
You know, we try and check the phone, though. So if you do send...
You know,
if you call in, it's a higher chance. If you message, it's a reasonable chance. Anything else is largely not going to happen.
Yeah.
So, you know, just a little level of courtesy there.
Play in a reasonably comfortable environment. I like that you put reasonably in there.
Well, it's Perth. In the summertime, nothing's reasonably comfortable. It's, the goal of that is to make sure that you're not in there like sardines in a can.
Mm.
You're not in there with no AC in the middle of summertime, with no seats. You know, WATC was our most packed event. And even that, I think we still had enough room to move between the tables for the teams to get around. We could have, if we jammed everyone in as best we could, we probably could have gotten it out to 140, 150 players.
Yeah,
but you
have.
Just wouldn't have been able to move.
Hmm.
So the goal always has to be, you know, in between games, what happens? It's all well and good once everyone's at the table and playing, because there's not a lot of movement. But if you have to have 120 players moving around the room with armies, you need to have room between the tables. You need to make sure that the chairs can be all pushed in under the tables.
But I think that even during the game, there needs to be enough room for people to be able to comfortably and easily move around the table. If you've got two players who are back to back for those two tables that are next to each other.
Rubbing bum cheeks.
Oh yeah, well, we try and avoid that if
possible.
We try and make sure there's enough room that you can actually sit comfortably in a chair.
If you need to, yeah.
Well, most of our players sit down by midway through game two.
By the afternoon, yeah, you want to
By the afternoon, everyone's sitting down.
Yeah.
There's a couple of people who are still standing, but they are the minority. So, yeah, we don't expect players to play outside weather, and you've written here if the weather's bad, but, you know, really, people shouldn't be playing outside.
No, look, I mean, I played outside at ETC in 2012. That was in a tent.
Well, that's not outside.
Well, it was still on an oval.
Like, yeah, but it's not outside. You're not playing under a gum tree.
No, we were playing in a blue plastic tent in the middle of the Polish summer, which was 35 degrees that day and no AC. So it was hot.
Yes, but you had beer.
There was a lot of beer, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So that's that one. Every other player held to the same standard.
So that's just about being consistent with the way we treat players, not giving favouritism to anyone, not giving special penalties or dispensations to anyone.
Yeah, so we've got here whether that's painting, sportsmanship or something else. Everyone's equal and we treat it as such. The only thing I will say about this is for painting. So we're really clear with what our painting standards are. Despite being really clear with what our painting standards are, we still have some people who turn up to events with models that are still on sprue, and then they quickly put them together in the reception area in the morning, or they turn up with models that are still bare plastic. They don't meet our painting standards.
No, they get one warning.
And that's what I was going to say. Players will be given one warning at our event, and at the next event, any models that are unpainted need to come off the table.
Yeah. When we do Youngblood style events for the guys who are under 16, they're held to basically the same standards. And if anything, the guys who play those events seem to be even more keen to make sure that they meet those standards. Mm. So,
but I think with the difference between the Youngbloods and the non-Youngblood events, what the expectations for those are written in the players' pack.
Yep.
So if we're being more lenient with those, and for some of the different game systems, we've had different painting expectations as well. This is around the people who are playing in the same event.
Yeah, exactly.
So everyone who's played in the same event is held to the same standard. But if you are playing someone who has an unpainted army, what we ask is that you first let us know, because if we haven't been made aware of that, then we're unable to speak to the player about it.
Yep.
Secondly, know that if you have let us know, that player has been spoken to. And you may not see that happen. And in an ideal world, you won't see that happen, because it's done privately, it's done discreetly. And we're letting the player know that this is the first warning and it's the only warning. After this event, any models that come will not be allowed on the table if they're not painted to the appropriate standard.
Yeah. I think that's something that a lot of players miss about when these sorts of things, not just these, but like paint, sportsmanship scores and some of the sportsmanship altercations that have happened in recent international events. You don't, as a player base, if you raise a concern, you have to have confidence that the event organisers will go away and deal with that without you needing to follow it up, without you needing to go and jump up and down and demand answers, without you needing to feel like you're going to threaten to leave, without you needing to be any further involved.
I guess what I would hope is that the players that attend our events have enough faith in us to believe that we are going to actually action these things.
Yeah.
And so we firmly believe that people should be treated with dignity and respect. And so part of that is not calling somebody out
in front of everyone.
Now, we are both sarcastic and we both have a warped sense of humour. So there are times with people who we know well where we will tease them in a good-natured way. And it's supposed to be a joke and it's done with love and affection. We will never call somebody out seriously and in front of a group of people.
No. It's certainly something that the TO in question, whether it's us or another event organiser, should be dealing with privately. Away from anyone to make them feel judged or feel ridiculed or anything like that.
Mm.
You want to make sure that the conversation is done in an adult manner. You're not, you know, yelling and snarling and all the rest of it. You want to make sure that the player understands that it's not an acceptable standard or an acceptable behaviour or whatever it is they've done, but they also get the right to not be dressed down in public.
Hmm.
So, yeah, you just have to essentially trust the fact that once you bring it to a TO's attention, that the TO will action it.
Yeah. Play games in a safe and relaxed atmosphere.
Yeah, look, I think the point of, you know, safe and relaxed atmosphere means that you don't feel like you're being intimidated, you're not feeling like it's a dodgy venue or a dodgy location. no, the suburb name doesn't qualify as anything to go on in that regard. I've played at some interesting venues around the world, and I've played in some fantastic venues around the world. I've never once, or maybe once, felt a little bit uncertain about the venue when we got there. But, you know, the fact is that we always try and make sure that the events are as safe as possible. We make sure that they're well lit. We make sure that there's plenty of parking. We make sure that, you know, we're the last ones there, and the last ones to leave and the first ones there to make sure that everyone gets away safely. We've had situations where one of the guys basically didn't know how he was going to get back to his home from an event because he didn't know where the bus stop was. And, you know, we organized with another player we trust to help him out. So, you know, a safe and relaxed atmosphere means that there's, you know, you're coming in and it's meant to be a fun day. You're not stressing about where you are or who you're around. And
yeah, and all players have the right to feel safe. And one of the responsibilities of ours as a TO is to make sure that poor behaviour and aggression and discrimination or inflammatory language, any kind of aggression or abuse, is not tolerated at all at any of the events.
Yeah. I mean, a loud outburst and a mouthful of swearing will probably get you, hey, come on, settle down.
It depends what it is.
Yeah.
And it's all contextual. So, you know, we have a player who is absolutely gorgeous, who makes so much noise, it's just not funny. And the events don't feel the same without him.
If he's listening, he knows who he is, and the excuses that you've used up until now are now gone, mate. So
time to get your butt back to an event. So, you know, he's really loud, and he's... But for me, that actually adds a lot to the atmosphere.
Yeah.
There's also, you know, people who use bad language. There's a difference between swearing with someone and swearing at someone.
Yeah.
And so one will obviously be allowed and one is definitely not okay.
No, and depending on the severity, it'll either be a pull your head in or get out, or it might just be a get out.
Yeah.
Depending on what's gone on and what the threat level, I suppose, is.
And that's not us kind of coming in and going, you are going to speak this way and you're going to do this way. It's about recognizing the rights of players to feel safe.
Yep. And it's about, yeah, everyone being treated the same way and everyone being treated courteously, and, you know, swearing at someone with threats of violence is just not going to happen.
Mm.
It's just not.
No. Players have a right to make a complaint about the event and expect that this will be investigated appropriately and in a timely manner.
So this one's sort of a post-event comment more than anything else, because ultimately we'd like anything dealt with on the spot if we can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've had a couple of issues that have been brought to us. I remember one actually quite clearly from a player who got in touch with us on Facebook after an event and said, hey, look, this has gone on. I think this player might be cheating. Here's the situation. And we went through it all. I went and got the other player in question's army lists. We went back through all the information with that player step by step. And at the end of it, he went, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to accuse him of cheating. I didn't understand what he was telling me. I misread that. You know, we went through that whole process with him, because he was quite concerned about coming back to another event if we were going to let that slide.
Yeah. And there's two different things there. So one comes into one of the responsibilities of players that we'll talk about in a minute, which is the responsibility to actually speak to a TO as things happen. And the other comes back to players having concerns around the way that an event is run.
Yeah.
So if say, for example, we're charging for tickets, $35 for a ticket, but actually, you know what, we're not selling tickets. So at the last minute, we're going to make anyone who buys a ticket in the next 24 hours, we're making those tickets $15.
Yeah.
You have a right to make a complaint about that.
Yeah. If you've done the right thing and bought it early.
Yeah. If, you know, you're finding that you made continual tournament disputes and the judge for that particular event, whether that was Michael or a different judge, continued to rule against you despite the fact that you were showing them evidence that said that you were correct, you have a right to make a complaint about that and have that investigated and upheld. And you have a right to make sure that that's not going to happen at the next event that you go to.
Yeah.
So those are the kinds of complaints that I'm talking about.
Wrong doesn't mean that you get to complain about it afterwards.
Oh, you can complain, but when we investigate it, it's not going to be.
No. The trick there is that if it's written down that a bolter is strength 4 and I rule it as strength 3 because there's an argument, and it's written in black and white,
if it's written,
then clearly there's something going on.
Yeah, okay. So a bolt is strength 4, you've ruled it as strength 3, and you've continued to make similar rulings about that particular player for the entire day because you don't like him.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's not okay.
No, exactly.
So those, I guess those are the kinds of complaints that we want to hear about after the event or before the event, if at all possible, so that we can look at those and...
I mean, that's not happened, but at the same time...
No, it hasn't, but I'm just saying that people have a right to make a complaint if they feel that there is a justification for doing that.
And look, a lot of the time those...
So you're telling me that you haven't been ruling bolters as 3?
No, because they're 4.
Yeah.
They have been 4 since as long as I can remember.
So breakfast.
No, the point I was about to make is completely lost on me now. It kind of ties back into what I was saying earlier about me making a wrong call. If you, after an event, go away, find the actual rule and come back to us and say, hey, you ruled it this way, but here's the rule that says otherwise, that's completely fine. That's not going to overturn any results or anything on the day. And it's good for us to know that to make sure we're consistent in the future. So,
but I guess the thing is, that's not something to make a complaint about because you made a judgment with... the information that you had available at hand, and you made a judgment based on the information you had. You didn't make a judgment because you don't like
malice.
The player or out of any kind of malice or malicious intent. So if there's malicious intent, then fine, make a complaint. If it's just that you made a mistake because you didn't have that information available to you, well, then we'll still apologize for that, but it's not kind of...
Yeah.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
They can't answer you, sweetheart. They're on the other end of a speaker.
Well, I was talking to you. You can answer me, as you just did. Okay, number 9. You have the right to play on appropriate terrain.
Now, this is an interesting comment because when you look around at all the published events around the world, and if you go into any 40K page on Facebook... or if you Google it, you will find the standards of terrain
different.
Just everywhere. I was looking at a table. There was a guy said in one of the Facebook groups saying he was going to run his first ever tournament. And he was running it at a store and he put photos up. And he said, some of the players are complaining about the terrain. And I looked at the terrain and went, oh my God, there was like planet golf balls. Like they were really, really sparse. Now, we aim for between 25 and 33% coverage of the table with terrain. Mm-hmm. That's our benchmark, is we get a piece of 2x4 board and we put it out and we try and fill it with terrain. And it's not one type of terrain, it's all sorts of types of terrain. Whereas some events, like I know that Frontline Gaming with LVO and the ITC, the events that they run, they're trying to standardize the terrain so that the boards basically don't change other than the aesthetics of those pieces of terrain. Mm-hmm. Like if you've got this many buildings and this many hills and this many this and that, you kind of get the same board again and again and again, which for me takes a little bit out of an event, but that's mm-hmm. a personal thing. But that shows in our terrain because each of our boards is different and there's different types of terrain on each board and some of it's got more line of sight blocking and some of it doesn't. I think if you were
That is something that we do have people talk about is the line of sight blocking, and I'm not sure whether or not now's an appropriate time to talk about it, but I think it's useful to recognise that playing on a variety of boards with a differing amount of line of sight blocking is not necessarily a bad thing.
No, I think for any game system that presents good opportunities for a game to be interesting, whether you're playing Infinity, which is a really high density terrain game, with multiple levels of buildings, solid buildings, taking sniper shots through windows and all sorts of stuff, or whether you're talking about Age of Sigmar, where the game is a lot less dense in terms of terrain, or something like Malifaux, where you are a skirmish game, but it's not a sci-fi format, so there's less gunfire and shorter ranges and stuff, where the terrain is more about manoeuvring your models to get line of sight. The fact is that terrain... The variation in terrain will always give more interesting games. Sometimes you'll get a table with the wrong type of terrain against an opponent with the wrong type of army for you, and it's just that perfect storm moment of, oh, well...
Poo. Oh, dear. The flip side is, sometimes you get a board...
The other way.
Yeah. Sometimes you're the other player on that board.
Yeah, exactly. So while we do our level best to make sure there's plenty of line of sight blocking and plenty of area terrain and all the rest of it for our tables, it's not the same table every time. We've gone to lengths to block up windows on ruins and all sorts of stuff in recent months.
Have we?
Well, I went and found it and sprayed it, and you cut it up and glued it. Mm. And you're terrible with super glue.
I know.
If she ever offers to fix your models with super glue, don't take her up on it.
I'm never going to offer that. Honestly, I cannot make bits of plastic stick together, but I can manage to stick my finger to my mouth.
Yeah, it's bloody super glue. So those sorts of, you know, terrain, we always try and make, like, we've never run it without painted terrain. We try and make sure there's mats or some sort of surface on every board. Mm-hmm. We try and make sure the terrain is varied and interesting. Obviously, in recent months, we've seen events run with unpainted and substandard.
Less interesting terrain.
Terrain. Now, to be fair, in terms of game mechanics, because they were consistent, if the expectation is set at the front end where the terrain is less important in terms of the aesthetic and it's all about making sure that the boards are all the same, you might have had an argument there to have with your players to say, no, this was spelled out for you. This is the intent. This is what we're going for. Mm. Unfortunately, the feedback for that event clearly didn't... Mm. The players certainly weren't expecting it. Let's put it that way. So, yeah, playing with appropriate terrain, we do our level best to make sure there is an appropriate amount of terrain based on the game system, based on the point size and the board size. It's not always perfect, and each board will be different. So if ever you've got a concern with how the terrain's laid out or the volume of terrain... come and grab one of us, because if we've got spare pieces from another board or we've got spare pieces in the tub that's often under the board, we're happy to shuffle it around and fix it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. I know there are some events that actually let the players set the terrain up at the start of the game.
Let's do that.
Where they basically supply the tub.
Cuts an hour out of each morning.
And when you get to the... Well, we put it all on the table and just not set it up. Mm. And then you add extra time for the rounds. You had like 5 minutes for the rounds where the players then... agree on the board. They set the table out and agree on the board.
Okay, let's not do that.
And yeah, that's why we don't do that. So yeah, terrain's always going to be a sticking point. There's no such thing as the perfect table, because if someone rolls up in 40k with a big Tau shooty or an Astra Militarum shooty army, and they have to face off against an all combat Gene Stealer Tyranid horde or a Khorne Berserker horde, and there's no line of sight blocking, then the assault army is going to have a bad day. If there's plenty of line of sight blocking or too much line of sight blocking, then the gun line is going to have a bad day. And it's hard as a TO to make sure that the tables are all consistent in that regard without just going to carbon copies of the same terrain again and again and again.
Which we've made an active choice
to do. We've chosen not to do that. But yeah, it's one that we hopefully can continue to uphold as well, in that we try and give the best possible terrain we can with the time we have and the money we have and... the space we have to store it.
Well, yeah, that's it. So I think that kind of wraps up the expectation, well, the rights for players attending events. Do you want to go into responsibilities now, or are we going to take a short break?
Well, I'm thinking that this is going to be part one, because we're already closing on an hour for this episode, so we might have to do a part two next episode.
I'd make that responsibilities.
Yes.
Awesome.
So we are going to take a quick break now, but we're going to wrap up the episode here, and you can check out part two in a couple of weeks' time.
Beautiful.
Well, that's it. We're done for this episode.
We're not even close to done, but we've decided that that's probably long enough to prattle on for today.
Yes. Yeah, we're going to split this one into two episodes, because at least this time it was vaguely planned, unlike normally where we just keep recording and then end up having to cut it and splice it as two anyway.
And hope that we can find somewhere to cut it.
Well, it's worked okay the last couple of times, but this time it's been a bit more organised, that's all.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about the responsibilities of players in the next episode, mm-hmm. which...
come out in a fortnight?
Yeah, it's 2 weeks away. Or if this is in the future, then just go to the next episode.
Mm. Well, it will be in the future, sort of.
You know what I mean.
Yeah, I do.
Until then, though, we've got a bunch more show stuff to do. Hopefully, we'll be able to announce some more interesting, cool stuff very shortly mm-hmm. with show. We're going to start putting out
some of the... painting workshops should be up. By the time this goes up, most of the painting workshops should be up today or tomorrow.
Yeah, and most of the players' packs will be going up in the next couple of days as well, which is cool. Mm-hmm. And we'll also be able to start sharing some of the different events and things that are going on. We'll have... by the time we get to the next episode of this, we'll have also had doubles finish, which yes. we'll have to give a wrap-up for. Mm-hmm. And I think we've got 24 teams so far.
You said before we got 25 teams. Make up your mind. Have we lost a team in the course of the hour that we've been recording?
It's more than an hour. And I was counting it off the cuff, like looking at the PayPal. So could be 24, could be 25, could be 26. Who knows?
Let's hope for 36.
I think, what did we have last year?
I have no idea.
I think we had, I want to say 30 last year.
36 teams this year. We need 36.
Need a few more just to make it cool. In the meantime, though, we're going to wrap this episode up. Thank you very much for listening. We will see you for episode 23, which will be all about the responsibilities of players. In the meantime, if you've got any thoughts and feedback on the rights of players that we can include in our events, and if you think there's somewhere else in the world that has floor rules and responsibilities and rights for players, feel free to shoot those links through to us. We're always keen to see what other places are doing and how we can better improve our events.
If you have any suggestions for what we can, you know, use for the definition of sportsmanship?
Yes, definitely.
Let me know.
I think everyone's going to have a slightly different opinion of that, so it's important that we encapsulate what the community thinks, not just what the dictionary says.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah.
I think the dictionary definition of sportsmanship is being a good sports.
Oh, it's good.
I know. I was real like, useful. Oh, that's helpful.
Yeah, awesome. We'll also be live again in a week's time. Every second Wednesday, we're live. Come and join us on Wednesday nights to have a chat. Other than that, though, we will catch you in the next episode.
Happy gaming.
You've been listening to the Objective Secured podcast. If you'd like to get in touch, you can visit our website, objectivesecured.com.au. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/objectivesecured, or you can email us, obsec@optusnet.com.au. Thanks for listening.